We are live, bringing you an incredibly important announcement. Right now, at this very moment, in March 2020, I personally am running a Kickstarter, and I need your help to make my book a reality. My friend and fellow host of the DMnastics podcast, Neil Powell, and I have written a D&D supplement. It is called The Ultimate Guide to Hair, and it offers over 60 pages of new, playable Dungeons & Dragons content. I'm talking new spells like Mustache Copter. I'm talking new subclasses like the Nissus Sorcerer Bloodline. New magic items like Prismatic Hairspray. New backgrounds, new races, new monsters, new deities. Truly, the works. As of the moment I record this, we are 60% of the way to our funding goal, but we need to hit that final mark or the book will not be published. If you are looking to bring something new to your games, if you want a chance to publish your idea in this book, or if you think my work deserves to be published, please head on over to Kickstarter and search for The Ultimate Guide to Hair. You can pre-order the book to back, or if you don't want the book, you can make even just a $1 donation to help us get to that publishing goal. What's even better is our wonderful Katie has done the interior art for the book. So by backing the project, you will literally be providing myself and Katie with direct income. So please, please consider checking out the project, and if you can't give, point other folks towards the book. Let's get together and weave the tale of The Ultimate Guide to Hair. Announcement out! Okay, now let's get the main show started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Venture Maidens. Thank you, as always, to our Patreon donors, to Don't Split the Podcast Network, and to our theme composer, Emily Mayo. I'm going to give you a quick rundown on what happened last time, then play you a promo for another wonderful DSPN show, Tabletop Babble. So, here we go. Last time on Venture Maidens, our heroes were beamed up to have a chat with the Sisters of Sorrow. They let the maidens know that Nerul, the god of death, had literally been murdered in an unheard-of, extremely permanent way, and the entire fabric of the universe might fall apart if another god died. With this bombshell in mind, our heroes returned to Earth and were immediately whisked away to the military keep of North Point. Everyone got to open up their powerful parting presents from the Tsarina, as they prepare to journey across the Kronos Desert to find the mysterious scholar Anjou Elodie. And that's what happened! Okie doke, venturers. I'll catch you on the other side.
Hey, my name is James Intricasso, and I'm the host of Tabletop Babble, which is a role-playing game discussion podcast where I bring on awesome industry guests like Matthew Mercer, Ruth Tillman, Wolfgang Bauer, Cat Cool, and so many others. We talk RPG news, give advice, laugh, argue. It is a fun time, just like you'd have at a convention or local-friendly game store. Check out Tabletop Babble at DontSplitThePodcastNetwork.com.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Our heroes begin their journey across the Kronos Desert. But friendships fray when a secret is revealed. What could Rem's latest message mean? Can our heroes survive the horrors of the desert? Will friendship prove strong enough in the end? Find out in episode 77, All for One.
Welcome back to another episode of Venture Maidens! I'm super, super excited to be back to main campaign because it's been like a month since we played. Because we did have our Podcast of Wildemount episode last time. So now we're getting back into the heart of it. Things are getting spicy. It's really great. In the meantime, let's get this party started. Hello, everybody, my name is Celeste Konowich, and I will be your dungeon master.
My name is Katie, and I'm playing Farrah Valen, the tiefling sorceress.
I'm Nassim, and of course there's sirens happening right now.
They're coming.
You're too hot to handle, girl.
And I'm your human monk, Sayonor.
Run.
Yes. Run.
And I'm Kara. I play your bodacious barbarian, Kara Brynhilda.
I like how you're double Kara.
Kara playing Kara.
You're really channeling the Kara. You're Kara playing Kara Brynhilda.
Who is sage?
who is sage? None of that. We're method acting today. So that's pretty much where we left off. You were all at North Point preparing for your journey across the desert. Azold had said goodbye to you all, saying that she was going to return to the keep and shore things up there, because nobody really knows what Rem's next move is, so she might be coming for the keep. Nobody's really sure. So she bid you all farewell, and you all are sort of left hanging right now in the state at North Point while Duke Ravain is getting everything ready to go for your trip across the desert, which he has personally promised to lead. So, this expedition. So, you've had a shitty continental breakfast this morning. You've opened your presents, are kind of drifting around in the midpoint of the day, when finally you get another messenger shows up to you. And again, it's like that 16-year-old kid who, like, came up to you last time and was like, hey, please wait, like, Ravain's getting everything together. And he's like, okay, so we're ready for you. If you want to head down to the armory, we need to get you fitted for your gear.
There's special gear? Other than this?
Yeah, for the desert.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a closet full of linens. I think I'm pretty well prepared for the desert.
Oh, okay. Well, Ravain said that you need to come down, so could you just...
You know my kid will come down. Don't worry about
I just want to keep eating my shitty breakfast.
Get a muffin.
And the kid's like, I really am supposed to bring all of you with me.
It's fine, we're coming.
And he's like, yeah, he's looking at you in stark-eyed terror, like this is his first day on the job, and he never thought anyone would give him guff.
I'm going. Taking a brand muffin.
Lead the way, little guy.
Okay.
Good job. You've done it.
Thanks. So he starts leading you down these stone halls of the keep here, and leads you down to the bottom floor and then out into the large yard where people are still training. Saya, this is where you were running around in your laps early this morning. And he leads you across this field towards like one of the outer garrison walls, towards one of these doors, and opens it up. And he's like, okay, well, if you need anything else, I'll be around.
All right. Thanks, kid.
Okay. and he just, sort of backs up and runs away before you can tell him no again. and so when you kind of poke your heads inside, you see an armory in front of you. There are, like, lovingly cared for rows and rows and racks and barrels full of all kinds of different melee weapons, suits of armor that are out, like, on mannequins. The whole place smells like leather and oil. Just a well-maintained shop here. And coming from kind of the back of this room, you hear clanging noises and people like pulling out boxes from like large wardrobes at the end of the room.
Ravain, are you here?
No, not Ravain. Hey! And you see like tumbling back from one of the boxes, a halfling man is kind of staring up at you all. He is dressed in this very odd, like, kind of royal blue jumper. And he turns towards you all and, like, scratches his head. And he's like, so you're the Venture Maidens? Is that the story? Well, hey there, my name is Lou! And he's, like, walking and extending his hand at the same time as he moves energetically across the room.
I immediately match his energy, and I'm like, oh, well, it's a wonderful day. It's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for inviting us.
No, it's always so wonderful to have new people in the keep. It just blows my mind every time somebody new comes out here. What are you all in for?
Well, we're headed for a long trek through the desert, and we hear you've got some gear for us to make it a little bit easier.
I'm coming with you. I mean, what are you all doing here? What did you do to get assigned out to North Point?
That's kind of a longer story.
I just
turn over to the rest of them.
Well, we're definitely going to have a lot of time together as we wander through the desert. I was in for a big misunderstanding where somebody said I stole something, but I did not. Let me tell you that. Lola, are you around here? Where'd you go? And you hear another, like, tumbling sound coming out of one of the wardrobes as a halfling woman who looks nearly identical to him, like, kind of collapses with this big box in front of you. And she's like, oh, yes. Hey, I'm Lola. And she extends her hand and, like, walks out and, like, starts shaking all of your hands.
Shaking back vigorously.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, well, let's get started here. So are any of you good with the heat? It's like the varying levels of heat situation here.
I'm all right with it. You know, fire's like, ow, but like, not like, ah, so you know how it is.
Okay, got it. And like, Lou looks over at Lola, who like marks something down on a checkboard. How much would you say you can carry comfortably?
Nothing.
Ooh.
Nothing. Okay, Lola like goes and checks something on her board.
Kara says a lot.
Oh, Lola makes like a bigger check on the board. Yeah, and you elf. Sorry. Hi, I'm Lola.
Hello. I wilt like a little daisy in the heat. I can't.
Wow, you all are going to be really useful on this trip. Okay. all right. Any armor wearers in the house? I mean, obviously you. They're looking at Kara.
Kara, meanwhile, has been like, she's like turned around and she's kind of wandering a little bit like aimlessly in this armory. And you see she's got her arms crossed and her head kind of down, and she looks like she's in a state.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah. And like Lou, without being invited, kind of trails behind you and like puts a small hand like on like, you know, one of your gauntlets. And he's like, my first week was rough too. But you know what? It's not true what they say. We're not criminals. We're doing a good thing here. He like taps your gauntlet harder.
So this is your first week here?
Me? Oh, no, I've been here forever. I'm just saying the first week is hard.
Oh, right, okay.
It looks like cool. Your friend there is having a hard time. Am I the only one reading the room? Oh, no. Okay.
Kara's just, like, got her head in her hands. Is like, oh my god, can we get on with this?
And, like, Lola puts down the clipboard and comes over and touches your other gauntlet, and she's like, we're here for you.
Kara's looking at Sae like, I hate this, please save me.
And they, you know, pat you both and, like, head back over, and they start pulling out a bunch of things out of these wardrobes. You see all of these outfits, these very strange-looking outfits are being pulled out of the wardrobes here. These things that are mostly white and include very large-brimmed hats that have, like, a sort of heavy mesh that's rolled up around each of them, and they bring out pairs of gloves, and it looks like high socks, and all kinds of stuff that they're, like, piling down in front of each of you. And then they're like, oh, okay, why don't you try this on? Yeah, you know, and, like, Lola's, like, tugging at your arms to see if things fit. Are you gonna let them harangue you into getting fitted for all of these?
It's not.
Absolutely.
It's no hilarious, but,
No. They're just, and they're chattering away so happily the entire time they're doing it. If you're quiet, they're talking.
they can totally get whatever they need from me. And I'm listening. I don't feel the need to insert myself because they're on a roll. But oh, yeah. I am actively listening.
Okay. Yeah. And at one point, you know, Lou's like, oh, so what do all of you do, you know, in a high stress situation?
Kill shit.
Play it by ear?
Support my friends.
Oh, okay. I meant more like your jobs, but, you know, that's cool. We can figure it out as we go.
I'm an alchemist.
Oh.
And I like to read.
I do a lot of research.
Okay.
I either, like, blow up a lot of stuff all at once, or, like, I heal people who, like, have been really hurt.
That's great.
Yeah. Two ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Yeah.
My answer is still kill shit.
Yeah,
she does.
Works for me. And then Lola comes up to you, Arnadel, with this small box. It's just this kind of, like, I don't know, black, like, very gently inlaid box. And she opens it up, and you see that there's a shard in there that's about 2 inches long. It looks like a piece of ice. And she goes and, like, grabs your wrist and then is, like, pushing up your sleeve and, like, kind of aiming this little ice thing at your
like
wrist.
Like a needle?
Yeah.
I have been through far worse. I'm kind of, I have the moment to, like, pull my arm back, but I'm like, eh. Ice. I have a feeling this is going to help me get through this hotness.
Yeah. And Lola, you know, you don't pull away. So she just, like, jams this thing up, like, right in between, like, those veins, like, south of your hand, you know. And you feel, yeah, that thing just jabs into you. And you just get this sense of, like, just cold numbness passes over your body while this happens. And, like, it takes you a minute, you know, you shiver and your teeth chatter. Before it, like, kind of subsides, and just, it feels like your body temperature is just a little bit lower.
Sick.
Than usual.
Sick.
And she kind of pats, she's like, you probably want to wash that.
I will. I do so regularly.
You've pricked multiple people with that needle.
Well, wow. I mean, these shards are quite rare. We only have a few. So yay! And then she goes over and gets another another box, and we'll do the same to you, Saye, if you'll let her. And then Kara and Farah, she's like, I guess you're fine.
You guess?
Kind of looks up at your horns and looks down and is like,
I'm okay, I trust your judgment.
Yeah, so in terms of what this does, this is an ice elemental shard. As long as this is in you, you can't suffer the exhaustion effects from heat stroke.
Cool. Sick.
You can still get dehydrated to death, but, like, you won't have to make a check every single hour if you're exposed to the sun. And Farah, since you're a tiefling, if you have resistance to fire, you automatically succeed on those checks anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, and she's, like, going away. She's like, oh, these are actually a pretty cool thing that we have here. But, yeah, I mean, that's why we're keeping the party really small, because, you know, we just don't have the resources we would have to make a normal run. You know, we've done this run, I don't know, what, like, hundreds of times? And, like, Lou will look over and be like, hundreds of times.
I feel like I'm in such great hands.
Good, you are! all right. So you all get a set of desert clothing.
Nice.
And that includes, like, these very tight-fitting gloves and socks, which basically are meant to prevent you from sweating, to retain all of your water. Here, these mesh screens on your heads, like, when you pull them down, they're heavy enough to sit around your shoulders. So if sand were to start blowing in your face, it would protect you from the sand, but you could still see.
Oh.
They also give you these little pouches that have what appear to be, like, tiny little spheres, like beads, rolling around inside. And then they look kind of all between you, and then they start pulling out these really big, like, backpacking, like, backpacks. So the ones that, you know, go full up and down. And they start figuring out weights, and basically cramming things like canteens and canvas, all this kind of stuff inside, and then testing out the comfortable weight level for all of you.
Ooh, how long of a trek is this exactly?
Well, if the weather's good, and it rarely is, it should be about 15 days.
Oh. Are we going on foot?
Yes.
Hoo boy.
I mean, a few of us can fly. We could carry each other. If we didn't have these backpacks.
Well, as I said, we have done this hundreds of times, and the fastest way to die in the Kronos Desert is to get noticed. And, most of the creatures there really like big pack animals or flying creatures.
Makes sense.
So, I mean, you could do a rush job, but boy, oh boy. I mean, they call me Lucky Lou, and I wouldn't even chance that.
All right. Got it.
That's why we're keeping the party so small. So it's just going to be us, Ravain, Northwind, and Amy.
Who's Northwind and Amy?
Yeah. All right. Well, do those packs feel great?
Yeah. Sure.
No chafing.
All right. Wonderful. Okay, well, you can store your equipment wherever you would like, but we should be setting out in a couple hours here as the sun starts to go down. That's prime traveling time for the desert.
Ooh.
All right, so say your goodbyes, and, you know, whatever.
Well, thank you for all the gear. We'll see you in a little bit.
Yeah, at the gates. Here, let's say 2 hours.
Okay, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. All right, see you then.
Bye.
And they're like, oh, we have to clean all this up. This is, they're like chaos, just total chaos around. They pulled every single thing out of the wardrobes.
Typical.
Yeah, so you leave the halfling twins to their business.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you would like to do before we get to this 2 hour setting out point?
Hey, Kara.
What?
Do you still have that never ending canteen?
She pulls it out and drinks from it.
Is it only beer?
It's only whiskey.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna die.
That will not help you.
She's like, I mean, I'm not gonna tell Queen of the Dwarves what to put in her flask.
I mean, don't forget, guys, I can make water anywhere, so I can refill everyone's canteen. Don't worry about it.
Without water being around?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought you had to, like, I thought it was, like, more water bendy.
She's the avatar. Like, it had to she be. Can just summon shit whenever she wants.
Okay, well, then never mind.
I create and destroy matter.
Yeah.
I was just all excited to remember one of Kara's equipment items.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, fuck it. Keep that whiskey in there. We might need it.
You know what? It's going to be a long 15 days. Get that whiskey. You do you. All right. So, if there's no other business, you all can rendezvous at the main gates. So this is like the sun is not yet setting, but you're a couple hours away from it by the time you all kind of congregate at the gate. So you see dressed again in this desert gear, head to toe with backpacks similar to yours. You see Lou, you see Lola. Standing beside Lola is the largest St. Bernard you have ever seen that has a little barrel around its neck because obviously. Yeah, and then you see Ravain is standing there. He looks a lot different. You've only ever seen him in like royal finery or anything, but he just looks like a normal dude in his desert wear. You see a very, very tall human woman who's got like her head like shaved down and she's got tattoos all over her head and skin, and she is not wearing desert clothing, though she does have a very large pack, and you see a giant great axe slung across her back. And then you see have you all ever seen an Aarakocra? The bird people?
Nope.
A knowledge of some kind?
No, I think you've heard of Aarakocra, though you've probably never seen one in normal society. They're bird people. So you look at them, you know, they have beaks and wings and arms as well. So one of these Aarakocra is standing there, and they sort of have a crane look to them. So white feathers, like with this red kind of patterns on their feathers. And that's the group. That's all waiting patient for you to arrive.
Ooh. Yeah, we roll up in our new swag.
Yeah. And Ravain is like, well, I guess it's time to head out. You all ready to go?
I cast Mage Armor on myself. Yes.
Great. All right. Well, we're going to move through the night. Take us about a day to get to basically the edge of the Kronos Desert proper. We have some people that we usually stay with when making this journey, but then the fun really begins. So, let's get moving.
All right.
The big gates of North Point open up, and you head out across these arid flats that kind of surround this entire place. So I've said it before, like, the entire region of North Point, all around there, is just dry, like, cracked, baked earth, like a non-icy tundra, just desolation all around this point. So the keep can see, like, for miles in any direction, so you're just kind of crossing these salt flats here. So it's hot. It's not uncomfortably so. But I think your new gear is all, it's a little bit itchy. It's all made of, you know, canvas and has layers of something inside of it. So it's itchy. You're not sure if it's been cleaned since last time it was used. That sort of vibe. Yeah, and you just begin walking out. Lou and Lola are chattering whenever it's quiet again. But is there anything you would like to do or say over the course of this big block of walking?
I guess introduce ourselves to the human woman and the Aarakocra and find out which is which of Amy and, what was it, Wind something?
North Wind.
North Wind.
Oh, yeah. I really want to get to know the very tall woman, which I assume is Amy.
You never know.
I'm asking, like, I'm like that annoying person asking all about her tattoos because Sawyer's really interested in getting tattoos. Just like, what was it like? It's on your head. Like, how long have you had them? Where'd you get it?
Yeah, and she'll turn down and, like, look at you and not respond to your questions until you stop talking. And she'll be like, my name is Northwind.
I knew it.
Nice to meet you. It's a beautiful name.
Kara looks up at this very tall woman and is like,
Nice.
She kind of looks at you and like nods. We have too long to travel together. Save your questions in intermittent bursts. Otherwise, we'll have nothing to talk about.
Practical.
I think that's just a defense mechanism you like to tell people to get them to go away. But I respect that you want space, so I'll give it to you. You're right, we have plenty of time. I am glad to have you in our party.
She makes a weird sort of grimace and is like, okay. And then,
so Amy!
And then the Aarakocra, yeah, will turn over and be like, hey, I'm Amy. Northwind is just kind of like that. You'll get used to it. I have. But anyway, what are all of your names? Why have you been sent out, well, to North Point in the first place, I guess?
We gotta save the world and shit.
Hmm. Well, I suppose that's a good enough reason to break season and head across the desert. And Ravain sort of calls back and he's like I said, we're just gonna get this done. No questions. And Amy's like, all right, we can play it that way.
Mm.
And then at this point, you know, Lou's like, this is our dog. Yeah,
tell me all
her
about
name is Lady. She's Lola's animal companion.
Lady.
So, you know, also, we can ride her. Sorry, you all can't. But, you know, it certainly makes traveling across the desert when you could ride something a lot easier. Not that you would know. Sorry.
So, yeah. You asked us earlier, Lou, what we all do. What's everybody in your group do?
Oh, yeah. Me and Lola, we're rangers by trade. So, you know, long distance, pew-pew, good with nature, that sort of thing. So we're here to make sure you don't get lost. Tell you what plants are good to eat, what plants are not good to eat, stand in the back, that sort of thing. And then Amy's like, I am a druid and sort of serve as a eye in the sky, if you will. And then Lou laughs as she says that. Yes, it's still not funny. And then North Wind looks back and is like, I kill things.
You two are gonna get along!
Car reaches up her fist for a fist bump.
Northwind is like, I don't understand this.
You hit your fist against my fist in a show of camaraderie and understanding.
That does not sound like how that works.
It's a custom of the elven people, as she motions to Arnadel.
Arnadel, having no poker face, is like, what? Meanwhile, she's been very consumed with taking notes, and it seems odd considering that the vast, expansive emptiness doesn't seem like there's much to take notes on, but she is.
It's odd. She's out here
learning. What do you see with your magic eyes, Arnadel?
With y'all eyes. I'm sure that there's like magical signatures. She's got her like eldritch sight
Yeah.
Working.
I mean, so looking around, a lot of your companions are carrying magic items at this point. You see that Ravain has a horn that's strung across one hip that is very magical.
Oh, no, I'm looking at the environment.
Oh, yeah. So looking around, this place is pretty barren of life, of magic, of everything. It's a very desolate landscape in front of you. It's kind of spooky how little magic is out here. But as you move, like, through kind of the hours of the day and you're starting to get closer towards the desert proper,
mm-hmm.
you can see in the distance the air becomes lightly diffused with magic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But this is talking, hour like 6 or 7 of
walking. Yeah, she's like every hour. Hour 4.
10% magic precipitation.
Oh yeah, she's like 100% crazy like science-y notes there. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Elven greeting. And probably far too late. She's like, oh yeah. And then like holds up her fist kind of like awkwardly. Doesn't know how to bump. She's just like, please don't hit me.
Northwind is like, you wasted space to bring a book.
But it's important to me. I don't have a sword, so there's room for a book.
You will be the first to perish.
Sure. All right. Artidol's like it. I've died before.
Northwind has no expression when she says that at all. It wasn't, like, judgmental or anything. It was just, like, this flat kind of fact. And then she turns, like, back to the Tundra and keeps walking.
What a treasure. I'm really gonna like her when we fight stuff, I'm sure.
Fun fact, 2 people in this party are PCs I have played before. So we could spend some time guessing who those are. All right. And yeah, at this point, too, like after, 5-6 hours of walking, you come into full dark at this point. The sun has officially set and things have gotten quite cold. So now, your canvas outfits that you're in are actually protecting you pretty well from the cold. You didn't really notice it between the shift, but it's really just calmed down the temperature of both the night and the day here. And then finally, now, like, you are starting to get off of that, like, cracked plain kind of ground, and the first trickles of, like, chunky rock are starting to expand before you get into, like, sand proper. But these rocks are all sort of a powdery yellow, so, like, if you pick one up and squeeze it, they fall apart in your hands. It's very odd, almost like a moonscape, if you're imagining it, with these yellow and, like, sort of scarlet flecks going on in these rocks here. And you are sticking pretty close. North Point was located just to the east of this main mountain range that kind of forms the entire northwest border of the plains. And right now, you are sticking very close to the base of the mountains as you're, like, skirting your way into the desert here. And so another couple hours pass. And then Ravain turns to Amy, who kind of nods and then, like, soars up into the sky and goes a little bit ahead of your party. She's a bird person, it seems. She got big wings.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's still fun to see someone do that.
Oh, yeah. She does it so casually. A lifetime of flying. Yeah, she takes to the sky.
Is that safe? Didn't you just tell us that, they like to eat flying things?
Oh, Amy can handle herself.
Well, she's just coming right back, right?
Yes. She'll do this from time to time just to generally scout ahead, see what's going on. There are dangers of many varieties out here in the desert. See, look, there she goes now. And you suddenly realize you can't see Amy anymore. It's like she's just melded into the darkness.
Yeah.
She is invaluable to crossing the deserts. Creatures, strange phenomenon. The Kronos Desert is an incredibly unsafe place to be.
And how many times have you made this journey?
Me personally? Well, when I was a new recruit, I made the journey several times. It's been a while, but, we do runs twice a year. This is sort of odd. An off-season run, so things might be a little bit more dangerous than usual. We have to move quickly to avoid the lightning storms.
Oh, great. Yep, let's do that then. Let's hustle.
But for now, we are looking out for, and he's kind of like scanning these, like the rocky hills surrounding. Why don't you all go ahead and make perception checks for me?
First roll.
14.
6.
9.
Okay, so Kara, in the darkness, you catch a glimpse of two like golden kind of feline eyes staring at you from the hills here.
And she points to where she sees him. Something over there.
Okay. And he like kind of turns around and you hear like a shrill whistle from maybe like 80 feet in the air up above you. And this set of eyes emerges like from behind this boulder surface, and you see a large lion is kind of standing atop this rock, and you see, you know, it's got this glorious mane surrounding it as it's right there looking down at your party. And Ravain throws out his arms and then says, "Amir, old friend." And the lion looks like kind of swings its head back and forth. And you see its shape begins to change as the fur kind of like goes away, revealing smooth human skin as it stands up on two legs. But it's in this sort of hybrid kind of form where it still has these very feline features and is standing there up on the rock. And in a sudden, like, scary fast leap, this lion man like comes down and is like, "Ravain!" And they go ahead and they like clasp in a hug. And Ravain was like, "I wasn't sure you were still going to be seasoning here. I know, well, it's getting close." And he's like, "Yeah, no, the weather's been good, so we've been staying here. Are these new recruits?" Hi, everyone. Sorry, you can call me Amir.
Hello.
Saw ya. Arnadel.
Oh, Farrah, sorry.
And he kind of leans in, like, as you're saying. He's not like he's listening to you, but he, like, takes a big smell, smells, like, of yeah. each of you.
The outfit's not us, I promise.
Yes. No, all of you humans smell, well, sorry. Elf.
Dwarf.
Sorry.
I'm like, I'm like the only human.
How many of us are human? Offense taken.
Not used to speaking. I'm getting a little bit rusty out here, if you will forgive me. But my home is welcome to all of you. Please, come in. And Ravain kind of like claps him on the back, and they lead you like into the rocky hills here. And you see a cleverly hidden mouth of a cave in the side. And Ravain's like waiting for you all to come down. Amy doesn't. She seems like she's gonna maybe stay out here, watch things. And as you step like into this cave, you see that suddenly like moonlight is pouring down on the other side of it. Like this is just a short kind of tunnel that opens up into a much larger like rocky clearing that's open to the sky. And there are some tents that are scattered around here, a few possessions. But all in all, there's a scattering of people, lions, and people who look like lions, kind of just dwelling around this space here. And they all, like, as you come in, you know, you see the glow of all of these feline eyes looking at you all, and lots of noses just sniffing as you enter. So, Ravain's like, what's the news? Oh, please, all of you, make yourselves comfortable. We should probably use our own equipment. And Ravain will pull out some canvases and everything. There isn't really, like, furniture in this place. These people don't seem to live with a lot. You do see that there are a couple, like, little lion cubs that are, like, rolling around in the center. And they all come bounding up to each of you. And they're just, yeah, sniffing your hands and your feet.
Precious.
This is cute. Very, very young. Aww. Like just a few months old. Babies. I want to know what these things are.
Well, what if we put a lion cub on top of the dog? That'd be even cuter.
Oh my god, stack.
Please.
Yeah, Yeah. So, I mean, Edemir invites you all to sit down. He's like, I apologize if some of my kin aren't as used to speaking forms as you all are used to. We've grown quite comfortable with our animal forms.
Wait, so this is gonna sound really rude, but I mean, what are you?
Well, we're lycanthropes.
Aren't those supposed to be wolves?
Well, there are several different divisions, but we are of the lion persuasion.
Oh, that's really cool!
Yeah, we sort of choose to live out here. Well, some of us didn't want to give up our gifts. We look at them as gifts instead of a curse. But I'm sure you're familiar with the Star Arena's policy on lycanthropy.
Are we?
Oh,
that probably would have been a part of our briefing. Like,
yeah, and then Farrah would know here growing up too. I mean, there's so much magic and like medicine readily available across the plains that there are cures for lycanthropy. And so if you are affected, you must be cured. It's sort of like how like some immunizations are like mandatory for kids to go to school. So if you're going to live in society, you have to be cured of lycanthropy. It's just, they can't have people running around being beasts sometimes.
Live your truth, man. I mean, this looks awesome. You guys look like you're living life the way you want to on the land. Why not?
Yeah, we enjoy it.
So you offer your home, or I guess this area, as like a rest stop for travelers in the desert?
Yes, we've worked with North Point and Ravain specifically. Well, I almost killed him once. he kind of jostles Ravain, is like, yeah, but I got you. And Amir's like, you did. You really did. But no, we've moved past that. And it's nice, you know, having every once in a while, we do have the humanoid pieces of ourselves that need medical care or attention. So having that connection to North Point, it's a good guy you have here. And Amir kind of like punches Ravain on the side and he's like, yeah.
I send a quick message spell to all my ladies and I'm just like, okay, so I know Ravain has a thing with the Serena, but I ship him and Amir so hard right now. This is so cute.
So cute. Yeah. And at this point too, I mean, the cubs are like starting to do the cat thing where they're like climbing up your canvas like tunics and trying to like sprawl on your bodies.
I'm playing with them. I'm scratching their bellies and throwing things and wrestling.
Yep.
Yeah. And as you like cub's belly, all of a sudden like this like young boy like appears in your lap and just like, ah! He's like, it's like a year and a half old, you know, so like just like walking, like, ah! It's kind of screaming in your lap.
Beautiful.
And Amir's like, they're young. They spend most of their time in lion form. This is, you might be actually the first people real people they've seen in quite a while. Speaking of which, why are you all here? We weren't expecting you during this run. And Ravain's like, it's out of necessity. So is there anything we should know? Or, yeah. And then Amira will be like, well, the storms are going to be starting up soon, which means worm season. So,
like, small, tiny worms? Or, like, what kind of worms are we talking about?
No, great, big, horrible worms that breathe lightning and live in the earth. It's bad. So if you're gonna make it to the Vale, you're gonna have to move very fast.
Kara's like slowly nodding her head, like, cool, cool, all right.
Turns our heads to each other. Yikes.
But anyway, you know, you all should just get a good rest before heading out. The desert proper starts very close to here, so yeah. If there's anything I can offer you, I mean, we have And he kind of looks around and, you know, there's some, like, animal bones, like, scattered about. He's like, well, we don't have much to offer you, but there's a dry, safe place.
Kara will unfurl her bedroll and get comfy. Play with the kiddos. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The one immediately crawls into your sleeping bag. It's just, like, at the bottom. Refuses to move.
Just like my dog.
And a bunch of the other lions will kind of, like, move over and just sit around you, which is sort of an odd feeling, just being watched. Surrounded by a bunch of lions.
Yeah, I just Farrah just chats with them, like, when they come up closer and just kind of tries to immerse herself in whatever she can about their culture, because she's like, this is new and interesting.
Yeah, and like over the course of the night, you know, as you speak to them, they get a little bit more comfortable, and some of the adults will transform into their kind of hybrid forms. So looking around here, it looks like there are about six women here. One of them is, you know, very friendly with Amir, clearly, that maybe they're mates, you know, whatever. And then there are two males and then the three cubs that are all running around. And yeah, the women eventually, especially, like, get a lot friendlier. And, you know, most of them will switch over and start talking to you and asking you lots of questions about what life in, you know, Phelan, what's going on. They want to know, like, kind of the news, what's happening out there in the world, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Happily engaging in conversation, being very respectful of their space, and thanking them for letting us revive ourselves for the night. But I also want to know if any of them can share any, I don't know, tips or knowledge on these worms and what else to expect in the desert.
Sure, yeah. And Amir will kind of, you know, sit down and be like, okay, well, the worms, I mean, they're massive creatures, plated beasts. It's nearly impossible to hurt them. So the best thing you can do is stay quiet, stay hidden, not attract their attention, which I guess is, you know, why you don't bring pack animals out here. They can smell that miles away. It's like Meals on Wheels. And then, so don't get caught, and then also these, the rifts you have to watch out for. The Kronos Desert has this strange phenomenon where time sort of creates these gates or pockets. You know, it's sad, but it does happen sometimes at just the wrong moment. You know, if you're hunting or moving too quickly, you'll just fall through one of these gates and disappear. We've lost a few of our pride that way. It's random when they show up. The best you can do is keep watch. The air will sort of shimmer. It will smell like dust. You probably can't smell that, but the shimmering air, you should be able to see that. Just be vigilant. Then, of course, there's all kinds of other strange and menacing creatures that occupy brass dragons from time to time. You'll find them, you know, tribes of monstrous creatures, goblins.
Cool.
Don't go into any tombs that you might find or ancient buildings, mummies, all kinds of stuff. Sleeping. No, it's a great place that we love living here.
Yeah, it looks like there's a lot to keep an eye out for. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. And while you're having this kind of conversation, several of the people that are still in their lion form suddenly, like, kind of raise their heads and, like, turn their eyes towards the entrance of the cave. And you hear, like, another high-pitched whistle, and then Amy kind of, like, flutters down to the other side. She's like, somebody is coming. They are dressed in armor. They seem to be alone coming from the desert.
Oh shit. That could be Rem in the Avatar. ¶¶ We've made it to the autosave checkpoint. If you just want more of us playing great things, then you should check out our Venture Maidens YouTube channel. For all the games we play but don't release on our podcast feed, such as my running Descent into Avernus as well as the Dragon Age campaign, and now Celeste running a Call of Cthulhu mini campaign, you can check out all those Twitch streams on our YouTube channel where we save them for your convenient consumption. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter to see what our weekly stream schedule is so you can catch us live. We're able to make so much great content thanks to your continual support on Patreon, so thank you so much. Now, before we get back to the drama, I gotta tell you about D&D Beyond, of which I could not speak more highly. For the first time, I made a custom magic item on there, and it was so easy, I couldn't believe it. And if you watch episode 9 and 10 of Descent into Avernus that I'm running, then you'll get to hear about what I made. But if you're not familiar with D&D Beyond, it's the official digital toolset and game companion for D&D, hence the name. You can use it to build characters, track campaigns, run adventure, and do so much more. It has all of the Unearthed Arcana on there, which is really helpful, as well as all of the published material. It has a lot of content for free, such as all the basic rules, so you can make characters and do so much on there without even having to spend a dollar. But alrighty then, enough of that. Let's get back to the Kronos Desert.
Go and take a look.
Yeah, definitely. You can all kind of cluster up, and then both Ravain will come too. Actually, everybody comes, honestly, and all the lions are sort of poking their heads like out around. Go ahead and make me a perception check, because Amy's eyes, I say, is much better than all of yours.
Roll the natural one.
Yeah, you're like, what?
I don't see anything. You sure?
15.
15.
Hey. Yeah. Okay, so with the 15s, and then a bunch of the lions too start to like kind of like making this low throated sound, and Kara and Farah, there is a figure who's just kind of walking out of the sands like of the desert from beyond you here, and you do see, yeah, it's some kind of armor that's maybe like rusted, or maybe it's just orange. You're not really sure, but this figure is walking very strangely, like kind of jolting back and forth. Maybe like one leg is either injured or shorter than the other. You're not really sure. So that's what you spot from this distance.
Anyone know anyone in orange armor? Is that a thing?
No.
Is there... How far do they look?
Maybe like 200 feet off.
Oh, I was gonna say, can we like make a mirage and distract them or hide this place? But that'd be super obvious.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Ravain's looking around like, well, if it's just one person, who did you say you think this is? Rem?
A potentially deadly person.
Also, even if it's not Rem, we've encountered many a foe. A solo foe. That was very deadly.
But, I mean, you gave a really long list of other things that could potentially be out here, so...
That is true. And Amir will go get the cubs inside, and the two other males, like, kind of scurry back and bring the cubs. And then you see all of the lions, like, transform into these, like, kind of hybrid states. And you see with these, like, long claws and teeth bared and kind of, like, surround, you know, the entrance of this cave here. Looking ready to deal with some shit if it comes up. Yeah, and then, you know, Lou and Lola will take out their bows. They're like, well, we could get it from here. If you want to do that, if you want to play it that way, we could get it from here. I mean, boss, I don't know. I don't know, boss.
Kara is unsheathing her sword.
Maybe we should lead able-bodied group, including ourselves, away from the den of babies, in case this is a foe.
We could go to meet it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and you can all head in a big group here. So between all of you, Amy is still high in the sky here, but you've got Ravain, you've got Northwind, you've got Lou, you've got Lola, you've got Lady... a lot of L names. And then you've got like seven of these like were-lions with you. So you're rolling up with a force.
Wait, who is staying behind with the cubs though? Cause
so two of the other male were-lions.
Oh, okay. Because I would have stayed behind if everyone was going out, but I'll join them.
And you all start to make your way like closer. And as this figure is shambling towards you, you begin to see like, yeah, this thing isn't moving like a living creature would. It kind of like swings weirdly, and like patches of its armor have like rusted away. So there's like holes in it. And you see it's like caked with sand. Like maybe this was a body that was buried somewhere in the desert.
Oh God, I think I know what it is.
Yeah, when we get within 120 feet of it, Kara would like to cast Guiding Bolt upon it.
Okay. I will say, when you get to about right before you do that, you hear that it's saying something. Okay. And it's hard. Like, you're like, hey, what? What was that? Like, as you're about to clear the spell, and it's going, Saye. Saye.
I want to have the magic.
Oh, yeah. This is an undead creature that's in front of you.
Is it a
what? What? What was that word?
A revenant?
Yeah, you don't know. You're like undead. You can't see its face. It's like half encapsulated in some kind of like armor that's been smashed into its face.
My sighs are out and ready. And I don't know, can I make another perception to see if I can get a closer look at it? Or
sure. I mean, this thing is going to keep kind of walking towards you. I think, Kara, if you're like still ready to throw the bolt, this thing will actually stop where it is and go,
Saye, I have a message for Saye.
Oh, I bet it's from the mummy from the library.
I'm right here. I know you?
Do you wish to speak in front of these others? You did contact me privately.
Kara's like, what? Nani?
Oh. Yes, I'm okay with you delivering the message.
Stop interfering. Stay safe and pursue this no farther.
I would like to speak more with whoever delivered this message.
And the figure, like, reaches down towards their side and kind of, like, takes something off of this, like, weapons belt it has. And you see it's, like, a canteen. And this thing, like, throws it, you know, towards you. So it lands about, like, 30 feet away from it as this canteen is laying there on the ground.
I seek to unshackle us all, and I cannot afford to say more, lest you try and stop me.
How can I trust that this is coming from Rem?
Who else could send the walking dead from the desert you reside in to give you this message? I have conquered death, after all.
Kara is looking at Saye with big fucking furious eyes.
Can you tell me what these shackles are? Why do we need to be free?
I cannot say more. Just know that this is my curse, and I must do this alone. If you wish to survive, you must do nothing. This is the last warning I will give.
And you see that this undead thing in front of you lets out this weird, like, unearthly sigh, and then it just collapses. Like, its bones just fold in on itself, and the armor falls apart into this kind of putrid pile in the sand.
What?
What the fuck?
I go up to the canteen.
Yeah, and the canteen is clearly rattling, like with something inside of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna immediately open it.
Yeah, and as you open it up, like, you see the water elemental, like, curls out of it and kind of, like, drifts above it in this formless shape, and then just, like, kind of shudders, and then, like, starts, like, swirling kind of about your neck like a boa.
I kind of let it do its thing, and I'm so glad that it's back, and okay.
Yeah, it'll settle, like, you feel it kind of seep back into your skin, and then that sense of, like, fullness and rightness is, like, complete once again. As you hear that cool, serene water.
Kara is, like, barely maintaining her composure, and is like, Saye, start talking now.
Ravain's like, can we go? We'll go. Let's go back inside, everybody. Kind of, like, rallies up, and all the werelions are like, okay. And they all kind of retreat back to let you all sort of talk.
Are we, like, we're still close to the cave, right?
Yeah.
Like, if we need to, like, run in, we're good.
Definitely.
Okay, so, basically, a little while back, everything that's happening, I can't really comprehend. I've really struggled to process it, and I just needed to talk to Rem. That's really all. I needed to know if there was anything we weren't understanding, if there wasn't anything we couldn't do to come back to each other and find some common ground. And honestly, I didn't expect that kind of a response, but I don't know. I had to try. I had to try to reach out and figure out what their perspective is, because you can't understand an enemy otherwise. And I don't feel right coming into this battle just fucking sirens. I don't feel right just jumping into this battle wanting to destroy everything, I don't know, blindly. I don't know who to believe anymore. I don't know who to believe anymore. I can't just jump into the hands of the Queen of the Realm, the Tsarina. I can't just jump into the hands of the Sisters of Sorrow. I need to understand everyone's perspective first. And that's all I was trying to do, Kara.
Oh, man. Kara has just, like, thrown her arms up and is, like, walking away, like, in a circle. It's, like, just thrown her sword into the sand. It's just, like... just trying so hard to find the words to spit out to say how she feels, but just utterly fails, and is just stuttering, like, these, is just, like, letting go of these, like, stuttering grunts, so just like, exactly. I'm so full of feelings. And finally just, like, kind of throws her hands down at her side and flops down onto, like, the sand on the ground, and, like, a cloud of dust kind of kicks up, and she's like,
I don't see what's more clear about cosmic good and evil.
And she shrugs.
Okay, well, it was before we found out a god had been murdered, and it was before you guys lost your magical abilities and connections. A lot of stuff has happened since I sent out this message, I have, honestly, but still, I needed to know if there was anything. Like I said, I didn't even expect to hear back. I just needed to let her know that someone was willing to try to listen, and I thought maybe that would make a difference, whether or not she would listen to me, but
why now? Why not, I don't know, forever ago? You had this capability?
I didn't know I had this capability.
She's just like...
I just tried something, I don't know, I had been lost for so long, I had been... thinking about leaving the sisters.
What,
and I
you're gonna leave?
To do it for a million. I don't want to get into it,
sweetheart.
But really, I just needed.
Now's the goddamn time. If we're gonna go marching into some fuck off desert, now's a pretty good time to get into it.
I guess I've never had such a big community to be a part of. I mean, the monastery was one thing, but we were always studying, we're always doing our own thing, focusing on ourselves and self-improvement. But when you're working together for the improvement of, like, the greater good, it's something else. Your family grows, it becomes bigger. And I thought I was working with family this whole time, and I guess that's how I've always seen everything. But then once Rem turned around, I just couldn't believe it. I didn't understand it. So I was just trying to, and I mean, frankly, what has she done before the killing? I mean, she killed you. That's true. But I needed to know why. That was a crazy experience. I've seen two of my best friends die. I'll never not carry that with me. And I know you understand because you've seen Arnadel go through this. But for once, I needed to get an answer.
Kara,
I was ready to leave because I couldn't see more people get hurt.
Kara wanders over and picks up her sword from in some piece of shrub and sits back down again in front of you. It's like, I'm sorry I freaked out. That was a big reaction, and I understand. I do. I'm sorry.
I'm really sorry I didn't tell you first. I mean, I understand your reaction. I mean, that's kind of why I went behind everyone's back, and I really am sorry that I had to do that. But I also didn't think anyone would let me if I told you guys I wanted to talk to her. So I figured it was better that way. But I don't want to keep secrets from you guys again.
I don't blame you one bit. I've been thinking about it a lot and curious as well, because I don't believe things are that simple as good and bad. I think there's a hell of a lot more of a complicated situation. And right now it feels like a big old puzzle or rhyme or riddle or whatever. So I think every step that you took in this was logical. Of course we would be like, no, what are you doing? What are you thinking? You were right in assuming that that would be our reaction. And I would be lying if I didn't want to know as well. Because it was kind of out of the blue. Maybe closure isn't the right word, but double checking to make sure that that's the right enemy. Or if there isn't even an enemy. You know, I think we talked about it recently. Like, what is her goal? And is it that bad?
We still don't know. Except now that she has a power over death itself. And she knows where we are.
Yeah, she's always gonna know where we are. I mean, that's not really surprising to me. I've kind of made peace with that. But also, she was Nerul's daughter. So she's always been connected to death. She's also my patron's.
I don't want to unpack your shit again. You keep that inside.
Well, and she's always been able to find us in the past when she wasn't, you know, with the fucking Avatar, so.
Yeah, I'm not at all surprised about her ability to find us. That doesn't trouble me at all.
I mean, I'm just glad that you guys heard that message because we didn't glean much from it, but it still shows a little bit about where her head is and whatever she thinks she's doing, whether it's a fucking lie or not. I don't know. That didn't really make me feel any better. So obviously
she's
smarter
than that. She knows we're going to keep going after her tail. Like, I feel like that was like a more of a gesture to let you know that she heard your message. Of course she's going to tell us to stop. She also knows we're not going to.
Farrah's been, like, kind of standing there sort of tight-lipped, just, like, letting the original three have their conversation, and you just kind of hear, like, the metal unscrewing of a little flask, and she takes a big gulp, and she's like, so I haven't been here as long as everybody else, so I know that my perspective and my relationships with people aren't the same, but I think what I'm feeling right now is that whoever we decide to side with in the end, be it the Tsarina, be it the sisters, be it this Rem lady, they're all master manipulators. I don't think that we can believe anything that anybody says. I think the only thing that we can believe in is facts and what we find out as we're searching for these people and for the truth.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Farrah. I mean, if Rem really believes what they're doing is untethering people and unbinding us from whatever pointless chains they feel suppressed by, they're not the ultimate god. They can't know all this is going to benefit the universe and the world, so.
Basically, we're just trying to stop people from amassing too much power, because.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're necessarily beholden to any one particular group. I mean, even the Sisters of Sorrow, what does that even really mean? I think at one point I wasn't part of them anymore, so what does that even mean? The thing that we keep fighting for is, I don't know, you guys chime in, but fairness?
Absolutely. Quality and the greater good.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that we have to be a part of the Sisters of Sorrow or the Tsarina or Rem or anybody, but it's following up with Saya's decision to give Rem the opportunity to explain herself. I don't think it was a bad thing to do.
And I get why, because my initial reaction to that is, hell no! But I think that at this point, with this conversation, something else that we need to all start feeling is fact, is honesty between all of us. I don't think that we should keep any secrets, because I think we should stand here and decide that we're going to be open about everything we do at this point.
To follow up with that in complete agreement, if one of us wants to do something that might be disagreeable, we have to take everything with a pinch of salt and give each other the benefit of the doubt that our decisions are based off of our love for each other and ultimate desire to help each other. So if one of us wants to do something, like Saya reaching out to Rem, she kept it secret because she anticipated an intensely negative reaction. So to follow up with that, we need to all agree that we're not going to flip our lids and get upset if one of us wants to do something. We have to try to understand
everybody's each looking other's at perspective
and embrace it.
Kara flips a lid.
She finds a lid. It is flipped.
All of them!
Because the point of those things is because we are working together and we care.
Kara is staring daggers at Arnadel and is making no point to hide it. She lets out this big huff and just storms off.
Still love you.
We'll be here. Should I?
I mean, I'm glad we came to this point and this understanding. But I'm still a little scared of sharing things with Kara. But yeah, I agree.
All right, so three or four of agreement, and like Farrah's kind of like backing up, like in the direction Kara's going. She's like, "We need a 4 out of 4," and I just think it's mandatory to have this relationship all between us. We gotta be a group. Who's to say at the end of all this, we're gonna pick a side? Maybe we'll make our own side. I don't know. But we've gotta be a unit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Farrah's like, I'm gonna trail her and then eventually go meet up with her and talk to her. Like, give it like a 10-minute and then pop up. And maybe get punched. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Kara's hesitantly with us, but ultimately, they'll be with us, because we're always with her.
For sure. I'm going to be with her in this fucked up desert, because it's making me nervous she walked off. I'll be back. Farrah's going to, like, trot yeah. off after.
Farrah sees that Kara has, like, stuck to like the mountain line where the cave is, but just like a little bit further down, like a 5-minute walk away, and you see she finally sits down and is just looking really just a mess.
She kind of like waits for a minute, and then as she's walking, she's unscrewing her flask again, and
you see she has hers out.
Double flasks. Episode title.
The seat taken.
She looks up at you, looks down at the ground, and is like, join me.
And she sits down and kind of like clinks her flask against Kara's and takes a big gulp.
She'll do the same.
So what's on your mind? I mean, you feeling any hesitance towards just following facts, or is it because of bonds you have? Tell me what's going on.
You see, she leans back against a rock and she crosses her arms and she thinks for a second and she says,
no, I am absolutely for trying to figure out whatever the hell's going on, to figure out exactly what Rem's goals are and everything. You know, it, she just like snort, like kind of growl snorts, and what really pissed me off is that it seems like they're not willing to pick sides. They're not willing to pick a cause and go with it. They, you know, they, it's like they don't understand loyalty. And they've always said, like, our group and our friendship first, but that's never how I felt. They're good friends. I like being with them. I would lay my life down on the line for them. But at the end of the day, it is the greater good. It is the greater cause. And I just don't think they understand that. And that's why I'm a little frustrated.
I think it's gonna end up being a lot about communication, our own perspectives of what the greater good is. And we're all very different people. I mean, we all drink and we have a good time, but under normal circumstances, I really don't think that this group would be a thing.
That is true.
Yeah. As is, I think that every one of those girls, including yourself, we just want to make sure that we protect the most amount of people possible. And I just think that we're going to have to find out what the greater good is as we go and we find more information. And if you're having these thoughts that, you know, maybe their perspectives aren't the same as yours, then, you know, we cool off tonight. We've got a 15-day trek. We got a whisper, because fucking worms. Oh my god, bugs everywhere I go. Well, I don't know what it is with you people, but we'll figure it out. We'll come to an understanding. It's hopefully gonna be before everything goes to shit. But we all have a destiny and we're all gonna play our part.
Kara is playing with like one of her hand axes, like in the sand, is like using the blade to like draw lines and stuff. And, you know, she's like, I will do everything I can to stop Rem if that is the right thing to do. And I don't know if I can trust the others to do that.
I think, just as you said you would lay down your life for them, I think that if you were ever in danger from Rem, they would murder that asshole. I mean, not that I have an opinion on her, but,
no opinion. Shade eyes.
But I mean, it is what it is. We can just do our best. We're going to find out whether it is what we want it to be or not. But I think that no matter what, we have a better chance if we trust in each other.
Kara just shrugs and takes another drag from her flask.
Well, I'll fucking punch this lady for you, if that's what it comes to. So tonight, I don't know if you want to just look at this amazing sand for a while longer, but Maybe we just take a little space and revisit this in the next 14 fucking days.
Can't wait.
Woohoo! She takes another gulp.
Alright. Do you all kind of drift towards sleep, restless sleep, staying up late?
Tara will definitely spend another hour awake sitting by herself before eventually going over and getting some shut-eye.
Yeah, I think, like just before you're about to, like, walk into the tunnel, you hear a voice go, "Sorry about your, friends, that sounds really tough." As you see, Amy has been, like, sitting up on the top of the cave, just, you know, watching Tara's things.
Like, oh, like, has this look on her face of, like, oh my fucking god.
You know, if you're ever confused about what the greater good is, it's the planet.
I'm aware. That's why I'm trying to stop the cosmic force of Rem, who's trying to blow up life itself or some shit.
No, not the gods or anything like that. It's the planet. Like the dirt. You know what I mean? Because we all live here on it. I've never much cared for who's above it. Hell, even who's below it is pretty terrible, but the people who walk on it are pretty great. So, that's just my two cents. You know. Sorry, I didn't mean to intrude, but it's literally my job to watch this cave and be invisible. So, that's what we're working with. But anyway, okay.
Kara's just, like, slowly nodding her head, like, waiting for the conversation to be over.
Okay, yeah, she, like, claps her beak shut and kind of, like, does the thing, like, the bird when they scooch over on a little pillar. She kind of scooches backwards. It's like, good night.
Night.
Sorry. Yeah. And, you know, the night passes, fitfully for some of you, easily for others. And you all rise before dawn. You start to head out and begin making your way into the desert proper. And you have a very uneventful couple of days as, you know, this kind of rocky yellow ground turns into true sand here. And the sand of the Kronos Desert is sort of a burnished orange in color. So when the sun rises and sets, it almost seems to gleam like bronze or some kind of, you know, other archaic weapons as you're moving across the sands. And this desert at large is very hilly, but very, like, when you think of, like, the Sahara Desert, where it's just these, like, dunes that rise up and fall like mountains and are barely disturbed by the wind. That's sort of what you're dealing with. And generally, the schedule shakes out that during the day, the height of the day, so usually around, you know, 8 o'clock, you all kind of set up your tents to try and get some sleep, and then set off again when it's 5 or 6 and the sun is beginning to set. So it takes you probably a couple days to adjust to this weird schedule. You all have been loaded up with these canvas tents and poles that the people from North Point put together like experts, especially Lou and Lola. They've done this, like they said, and keep telling you hundreds of times. So it's like clockwork. And by the third day of travel, you begin to notice that the air starts to change. There's like a static electricity that runs through everything. And you can't help but notice that everyone in your party is just watching the sky fearfully. Like, over and over again, they just keep turning skywards. And at the end of that third day, the lightning begins to hit. And, I mean, it's odd. There's, like, very few clouds in the sky at all, but these bolts of lightning will just strike down at these dunes repeatedly. So much to the point, like, at camp, you know, they start putting these, like, iron rods into the sand, like, further distance from your camp in hopes of drawing lightning there instead of to your direct location. And as you start travel on the fourth day and these lightning storms have begun in earnest, you're making your way across a dune and the earth begins to shake as something very, very large moves beneath you. And again, in that terrified moment, everybody's hands go to their weapons, and you watch in horror as lightning strikes down upon the sands around you, and just this maw raises up from the sands here, and you see it like spilling all around as this thing with these awful like centipede like pincers is coming out of the earth here and just crawling up as this gargantuan size segments just keep coming and coming and coming out of the sands as it stretches towards the lightning in the sky. And that's where we're going to be ending for today. Yes, chat, this is where I'm ending. Oh, thank you all so much. Oh my god. Wow, that was a good episode. I didn't talk for like 30 minutes, which is the best gift to a DM ever for a lot of reasons, but
yeah.
Wow.
Fabulous. Such fun role playing.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
I loved it.
This is one for the books, y'all. Thank you all so much for hanging out and for being here. Damn, y'all are great. Fuck, man, I don't know. I've been your DM, Celeste Conowich.
Your neutrally chill for once.
Neutral chill.
Yeah.
For once, I think maybe the first time, Moon Elf, Warlock, Arnadel, Ithil.
And I'm Katie. I play Farrah Valin, doing her best on the go therapist and healer at your service. Maybe. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Go team.
And I, Nassim, have been your human monk, Cyanor, with a few secrets.
And I am Sage, and I played your big mood barbarian, Kara Brynhilda.
Big mood! Big mood! Oh, thank you all so much for stopping by. If you're new to the stream, welcome, what a one, to stop on by. We are the Venture Maidens. We would love if you would hit that subscribe button right here on YouTube. It helps us out. It keeps our lights on. That's wonderful. Also, if you could give us a follow on social media. So at Venture Maidens on Twitter, Instagram, our Facebook page. That's the best way to keep up with all the amazing things we are constantly doing here. There's too many to say all the time. So please follow us on social media. We also have a Patreon account. If you like what you see, even just donating $1 a month super duper helps us get new microphones, new backgrounds when we need them, all kinds of great stuff. Put together our Patreon packages. We craft magic items for you that you can go on. You can get the links to D&D Beyond. It's just a ton of awesome stuff here. But anyway, you all are fantastic. Oh, also, I'm running a Kickstarter right now. I helped write a D&D 5th edition supplement all about including hair in your D&D games. So it's new magic items, spells, races, everything based on the theme of hair. It's going to be wild. It's going to be wacky. It's over 60 pages.
Sounds amazing.
Yes. And Katie did all of the interior art for it. Ooh. And it's amazing. So I would love if you all could check that out. But I think that's all. Katie, thank you for posting that. But anyway, that's all, I guess. God, y'all are great. Fuck. All right. Well, you know what you all should do until next time?
Venture away!
Venture away, everybody.
Hey y'all, thank you so much for listening to this episode. It, of course, was brought to you by our final sponsor, Kobold Press. Kobold Press, makers of the Tome of Beasts, the Midgard campaign setting, and Deep Magic, are putting out Dark Fantasy 5th edition content on a monthly basis through the Warlock Patreon. You can get player options, monsters, magic items, and more for as low as $1 a month. Ooh, what? That is a steal if I've ever heard one, but that is not even it, my friends. For $3 a month, you can get awesome Warlock lairs, short adventures by some of the industry's best, like DSPN's own Celeste Conowich. I know what you're thinking, Celeste Conowich. That must be the top tier, but no, there is even more. For $5, you can get the zine in print each issue. You'll want it for these sick new halfling zine covers. Find out more at patreon.com/koboldpress. And as always, tell them DSPN sent you. That's all for now, folks. Have a great rest of your day.